your picture of life. So for us, usually the objection kind of falls on deaf ears. We don't really take it into account as far as how is the non-believer thinking about evil. And because of that, we can kind of push it aside and say, well, I mean, come on. I mean, after all, God uses all things for good for those who love God and are called according to His purposes. I mean, there's more to this life than this life. God's purpose is not our happiness. We know those things. But a non-believer doesn't know those things. And so to him, the problem of evil is probably one of the greatest objections that he has to your faith. He cannot make sense of his world with evil in it. And he definitely cannot make sense of your worldview as a Christian with evil in it. It just does not compute for him. And so for many people that come to you and say, if God was a God of love, why does he allow suffering in this world? We can't treat that lightly. We have to know the issue. We have to understand that if we don't deal with the issue properly, it's very possible that person will never be open to anything else I say to them. Because the issue of evil in this world is such a large one that many men have actually chosen to reject God based upon that one issue. You guys are like, what happened? I was looking for the scripture while Cliff was, and I'm like, man, I know what it is. And then he goes, well, what is it? And I quoted to him, and he goes, I'll go check it out and bring it on a piece of paper and show it to you. And, you know, try to be as inconspicuous as possible. And everybody looks, and I'm like, oh, you know, oops. So, sorry for that, but thank God I got that scripture. Thank you, Cliff. But before we go into that, I want to review a little bit to get our minds kind of sharp. You know, this is like mental jumping jacks, okay, to get ready to do this right. Now, next week, we're going to talk about methods, and that's going to be the most fun, the methods, okay? I don't think the problem of evil will take all of our time, so we're going to, first of all, talk a little bit about worldviews and what's consisted in a worldview. So let's review. What are the three main parts of a worldview? Who can tell me? One.
Knowledge.
Reality. What's the third? Morals. Okay, now you know the big words. You got to know them, even though we're not going to use them anymore. Epistemology is which one? Is knowledge. What is reality? Metaphysics. What is morals? Is ethics. Very good. Now, the problem of evil has problems in each one of these areas. One of the problems that I can arise to someone who believes God can't be a God of love because of evil is I can say, how did you know it was evil? Who told you it was evil? And by the way, what is evil? How much does it weigh? What color is evil? Where do I find evil? Am I going to go to Borneo and find a pound of evil under the clay? What is evil exactly? Okay? And then, of course, the moral question of evil is how we determine what is evil and what is not evil. So those are the three parts of a worldview that we've talked about, and that everyone has beliefs in each one of these areas, and these beliefs make up their worldview. So when we're speaking to someone about their worldview, the first thing we need to do is we need to find out what it is. And we may not be able to put a name on it, but we need to find out what's the underlying beliefs that's causing them to tell us certain things that are against Christianity. And in order to do that, I have to use a method that I like to call, and we're going to talk about this next week in detail, but I want to give it to you now because it's pertinent to this subject, and that is the Columbo method. Now, this is actually a logical method. It has a long Latin name, but we're going to give them nicknames so you can remember them. How many of you guys remember Columbo? Good. All right. I barely remember him, but I do remember him. Guys, listen, high school, that was mean, I know. You're with me, right, Charlie? I feel all alone. In high school, I'm always saying things they don't know. You know, I'm going, remember Bruce Lee? And they're going, who's that? I'm like, you don't know who he is? You know, I can't believe it. So, great, you guys all know who Columbo is. That feels great. Columbo, you remember he'd come on the scene? I love watching Columbo. He'd come on the scene, and he's just this tattered guy. You know, he's got his overcoat on. He's kind of New York accent a little bit. And he would ask these questions, and he would be so humble and so inconspicuous that people would just tell him everything, you know? He'd say, so where were you on the night of the 23rd? I was at home. Oh, yeah, right, yeah, you already told me that at home, of course. Well, then why, you know, he'd come back with another question until this person is finally just giving him the whole, you know, spiel, the whole story, and then at the end he solves the case, you know? But what he does is he continually asks these questions in a non-threatening way, and that causes the person to feel free about opening up and telling him everything, okay? That's called the Columbo method. And that's a method that's very, very good when you're in a stump or in a bind with sharing your faith. Instead of that person asking you all the questions, why don't you start asking them some questions? We all the time feel like we have to be on the defensive. Well, Christianity is true because there was 24 Roman soldiers at the tomb that protected him. And they're going, why do you believe that? Well, why? What are your reasons? And we have to defend ourselves. What about turning the tables once in a while? We're giving them autonomy. We're giving them the ability to think that what they think is automatically right, and I have to defend my beliefs. Don't do that. Ask them the questions. Say things like, oh, really? How is that? Or, that's interesting. How do you know that? Oh, I just do. Or, gosh, I've never really heard that, but can you tell me why you think that? And in doing that, you're going to get from them their worldview, okay? You're going to start to see their worldview come out to light. Talked about apologists that tells the story of the waitress. Did I tell you guys that story last week? About the waitress, and he was in there, why are you oppressing me, that whole thing. Well, he used the Columbo method. Ask questions. When you ask questions, they're going to reveal to you whether they're a naturalist or relativist or whatever. I don't believe Christianity. Well, why not? Well, I just think that there's no evidence for it. Really, have you studied it? What evidence would it take for you to believe? See? You ask the questions. And then you will have a foundation of knowledge. You'll know where they're at. And so then you can deal with the real issue. Some people will say, I don't believe in God. I'm an atheist. Now, I can just throw all the fool says on the chart, there's no God for all this stuff. But start asking questions. Start asking why. And you'll find usually the reason's not because of knowledge. Okay? It's very hard to be a true atheist. The reason is usually an emotional reason. Usually a presupposition. They were hurt in church. Or they saw hypocritical Christians in their life. Or they suffered. You know who has the greatest percentage of atheists in the world? Jews. You know why? The Holocaust. That's why they don't believe in God. It has nothing to do with knowledge. They just can't see how a God of love would allow that to happen to them. And so many of them today, sadly, are atheists. Sadly. I talked to Jews in Jerusalem that told me, I just don't believe in God. I saw a documentary on a woman who survived the Holocaust. And she said as she was going in to the concentration camp, there was a child beside her who was sick and who couldn't walk. And so one of the soldiers came over and bashed his head open with a rifle. And she said, it was at that time I stopped believing in God. It was at that time. And it struck me because what a reason she really does have to say maybe there's not a God. And that's the problem of evil. That's something that we all face. Every one of us have faced it in two areas. Number one, we face the knowledge, the area in knowledge. In other words, we've wondered why. And the other area is in experience. We've all experienced evil in some way or the other. And for many of us, for probably most of us, it's caused us to question the existence of God. And in terms of asking questions for the reasons for people's beliefs, many times it's because of the evil that they've suffered. That's usually why they become atheists and agnostics. That's why I want you to know that this problem of evil is very, very serious. Undoubtedly the greatest intellectual obstacle to the belief in the existence of God, to both the Christian and the non-Christian alike, is that problem. The problem of evil. And it seems unbelievable at all that a loving God would permit so much evil in the world. The amount of suffering and evil in the world is incalculable. There is so much suffering and so much evil in the world, we don't even know a fraction of it. People are suffering all over the world. And not just the fact that there is evil, but the sheer amount is enough for someone to bring a reasonable objection against the existence of God. It is reasonable for them to say, how can there be a God? It's not unreasonable outside of God's revelation. The amount of evil and suffering in the world alone is enough to cause man to question the existence of God. There is a Russian novelist, and I have a big quote from his novel in here on purpose. But this Russian novelist, Dostoevsky. You ever heard of him? Anyone ever heard of him? Wow. Amazing. Explains, I had no idea who he is. But he explains in one of his novels how human evil and suffering make it impossible to believe in God. In a scene in one of his novels, he describes how an atheist character, whose name is Ivan, explains to his brother, who is a priest, why it's impossible for him to believe in God because of human suffering. And this is what Ivan in this book said to his brother, who's a Christian. He said, by the way, a Bulgarian lady I met in Moscow told me crimes committed against the Turks in Bulgaria out of a fear of a general uprising. People talk sometimes of bestial cruelty, animals against animals, but that is an injustice to the beast. A beast can never be so cruel as man, so artistically cruel. These Turks took pleasure in torturing children too, cutting the unborn child from mother's womb, throwing babies in the air and catching them on their bayonets before their mother's eyes. Imagine a trembling mother with her baby in her arms, surrounded by Turkish soldiers. They pet the baby, laugh to make it laugh. Then a soldier points a revolver at the baby's face. The baby laughs and grabs the pistol. The soldier blows the baby's brains out. Artistic, wasn't it? Or how about the recent story of a Russian mother who locked her 5-year-old daughter out in the freezing winter cold all night and smeared her face with human excrement as punishment? She beat her and kicked her until her body was one big bruise. That mother could sleep soundly with the groans of her innocent 5-year-old daughter ringing in her ears. Can you understand how a little creature who can't even understand what's been done to her should beat her little aching heart with her tiny fist in the dark and in the cold and weep her unresentful tears to dear, kind God to protect her? I am told that man could not have existed on earth without God, and that man must seek the knowledge of God to determine good and evil. The whole world of knowledge is not worth that child's prayer to dear, kind God. Think about that story. Horrible, horrible atrocities. And that doesn't even scratch the surface. And in this book, this young man, Ivan, is using this as a proof that there is no God because of the evil and suffering. And add to that the moral evils that exist in this world. What about natural disasters and tornadoes? What about September 11th? What about the horrible sicknesses that we face? What about the fact that any one of us could wake up tomorrow and have a terminal illness? And those that we know that have those illnesses, and some in this room who suffered through those kinds of illnesses. And what about cancer, muscular dystrophy, accidents and disasters, severe sickness, and all kinds of terrible things in this world? How can we even think that God is good in face of such tragedy in this world? What do we have to say? We can say man is a sinner, but that doesn't solve the issue, because if God's a good God, shouldn't he choose to change things? And why doesn't he change things? Why doesn't he make things different in this world? And after all, if you were God, wouldn't you make them different? Are you seeing the issue? What would you do if you were God? Wouldn't you change it? Do you know, years ago, there was a huge Colombian mudslide. And in Colombia, this mudslide trapped thousands of people, killed them, and there was one little girl who was trapped up to her neck and chest, her head was just above the water. And for weeks, some of you are shaking your head, you remember this story, for weeks the parents watched her die every day. For weeks they watched her swallow water and try to spit it out and could not reach her because of the mud. And day in and day out she swallowed water until finally the water came up so high and she became so weak she drowned. Human suffering. Terrible kind of suffering. Why this lingering, gratuitous death? Why can't it be faster? Why doesn't God intervene? And if he's going to take her life, that's one thing. But why does he allow her to suffer like that, week in and week out? And what does this kind of suffering say to someone who's a non-believer? And we're trying to tell him how good God is. And he's experienced atrocities in his life. And he wonders about the pain that he's experienced. When a man sees these kinds of things, it makes it hard for them to believe in God. Because after all, how could it be that an all-powerful, all-loving God exists? How? How can we say that he does? And I've got to say this before we get into the actual logical problem of evil. There are two parts to dealing with this problem of evil. The first part is the intellectual problem of evil. It's just the facts, okay? It's just why it could be so, logically. But there's a second part that if we skip, we would not be Christians. We would not be acting as good Christians to skip. And that's the emotional problem of evil. Okay, that's people that have suffered evil. And they don't want to know why evil's in the world. They want to know why they're suffering. And I want to tell you this evening that when you meet someone who's suffering through evil, the intellectual proof isn't going to help them or you. Don't say, well, evil's in the world because of yada, yada, yada. I learned it in apologetics. Don't do that. Okay? Don't do that. If they are seeking to find out answers to why they're suffering and they're broken and they're open, deal with them from the scriptures. You all know how to do that probably already. You all know that side of it, which is the emotional problem of evil. But the intellectual problem of evil is what we're going to deal with first. And that is someone who comes to you smugly, sheerly on an emotional or intellectual basis and says, God can't exist because after all, there's evil in the world. Okay? This argument has been played out for centuries against God's existence. And we're going to get into it. So these first two parts, intellectual problem, it's how to give a rational explanation of the existence of God and the existence of evil. How can these two things coexist? The second is the emotional problem. We're going to talk a little bit about it. How to comfort those who are going through suffering and pain, specifically. Those are the two sides of that problem. Now, to someone who's going through suffering, and I've already mentioned this, the intellectual solution of the problem of evil sounds cold. But to those who simply are contemplating evil in the world, the emotional solution is unsatisfying. Okay? Someone says, well, why is there so much evil in the world? You say, well, just trust God. It's unsatisfying. That doesn't help them. Well, Romans 8 says, wait a minute, no, why is there evil in the world? But when someone's actually suffering, you see what I'm saying? That's when I come with them with grace. If you'll notice in Jesus' ministry, he met grace with grace. Did you know that? When someone was broken and hurting, he didn't call them a hypocrite. It was when they were hard and cold that he exposed their hypocrisy. Did you notice that? When a prostitute came to see him, he gave her forgiveness because she was broken. But when the religious leader came to him, he said, you hypocrite, you whitewashed tomb, you son of the devil. I mean, he just let him have it because he was being hypocritical. And he had a mask on. He was religious and he didn't want to see the truth for himself. He had a mental roadblock up. And so when someone comes into our life, and I can't stress this enough, who's suffering through evil, unless they ask you, don't just spurt out all these facts that you're going to learn. You need to meet them with the grace and the love that Jesus Christ himself would meet them if he were here. And he were with them. He would hold their hands. He would love them. He would show them his love. And he would give them explanations. But there are explanations that deal with the heart. Because sometimes man wants answers for the heart, not just the mind. But the intellectual problem of evil, intellectually, we're going to deal with first. How many of you have heard that statement said by a family member? Raise your hand. Okay. How about someone in your family that said, if God is such a good God, why is there evil in the world? Anyone in your family? Immediate family. Look at that. Almost most of you have that. Someone in your family said, well, I just can't believe in God because of evil. Intellectual problem. Here it is. It is logically impossible for both God and evil to exist. They are logically inconsistent with each other. Since we know that evil exists, we therefore know that God does not. Or another form of the argument says that it's possible, just not probable. The two parts of the intellectual problem of evil are the logical and the probabilistic. Okay? First we have the logical problem and the probable. I put istic. Just think of the probable problem. Okay? In other words, the logical problem says it's logically inconsistent to think that evil and God exist. The probable problem of evil says it's improbable. It probably isn't the case. Understand the difference? Very important. You tell me which one is easier to prove. Which one is easier to prove?
The logical.
Logical? Sorry. Wrong answer. Think about it, though. I want you to know why. I want you to know why. If I'm saying it's absolutely illogical that God exists, or if I'm saying it's probable that he does not exist. Probable, okay? It's probable is the easier one to prove because my premise is not as haughty. I'm not saying there's absolutely no way. I'm saying it's probably not the case. And to illustrate that, I gave an illustration of, all right, this is Africa, okay? You like my drawing of Africa. If I needed to prove that there was no gold in Africa, or if I was going to prove that there probably is gold in Africa, which one's easier to prove? That there probably is. Because all I'd have to do is go and find some one time. If I had to prove that there was none, I'd have to search the whole country all the way down to the deepest layer of soil and find none. Okay? So, the first one, the logical, seeks out to prove that it is completely illogical to believe that both God and evil exist. Most atheists hold to this one. It's logically impossible for evil and God to exist. They are two diametrically opposed things. Well, how do we deal with it? Let's talk first about this logical problem. At face value, these two statements are not logically contradictory. Okay, at face value, God and evil don't contradict each other. But Since this is the case, someone who holds this argument must be assuming some sort of a hidden premise about God and evil.